call upon our brother Dennis Tanner to exhort us from God's word. Brother Dennis.
My dear brothers and sisters, let us turn to the book of Genesis and the readings which we have been having over the last few days concerning the life of, or the lives of Esau and of Jacob. Now in the 32nd chapter, which is our reading for today, we have set out before us in the divine narrative some very powerful words of exhortation. We have the picture of Jacob, returning after 20 long years of exile to his native land. He is almost at the journey's end. And as the hills appeared in the distance, his heart would no doubt have been greatly moved with a sense of deep emotion. All the past years would suddenly rise up before him, as it would to us if we had been in the same situation. He was now a much wiser man. He had gone through much anxiety and tribulation. 20 years had taught him many lessons, and he would think upon those events which had sadly caused him to flee. In the divine outworking, it went right back to the days of his birth, as recorded in the 25th chapter of Genesis and at verse 22. Let us just look at that verse. Because here there are two babes in the womb of their mother, Jacob and Esau. And they struggled together. And they set the pattern which was to dominate their lives as nations, which has continued right down to our very day. And so we read in verse 22, Genesis 25, "And the children struggled together within her, Rebekah. And she said, If it be so, why am I thus? And she went to inquire of the Lord. And the Lord said unto her, Two nations are in thy womb, and two manner of people shall be separated from thy bowels. And the one people shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger." Now, in the Hebrew, the word for struggled in verse 22 is rostat. And it means to crack in pieces, or to break and oppress. And indeed, there has emerged from this beginning two distinct nations, two distinct classes of people, the Arab and the Jew, who through the divine operations of the Father have influenced the history of the nations of the earth right down to our very day. And they draw at this very moment of time the eyes of a fearful world. But to us, whose minds have been influenced by the power of the divine word and the glorious plan of salvation seen here in the emblems which are before us, the one of our race who struggled against sin nature and perfected his character through trial, the struggle of these two nations over the history of mankind is a wonderful witness that the Father will bring to fruition all that he has promised in his word. And in that, brethren and sisters, we should rejoice, because we are, in these last days, witnesses to these very things. We are witnesses to the day when it will soon be here, when the righteous shall be separated from the wicked, and when the great deliverer shall come to Zion, and when he will break in pieces those that have oppressed his people. In those promises we rejoice. And so, it is the Apostle Paul, when he wrote to the Corinthians in the second epistle, chapters 6 and verses 17 and 18, that he sets out very clearly the divine principles manifested in those two men, Jacob and Esau. And we shall see in a moment how they work out. The apostle writes in this chapter at verse 17, the sixth chapter of the second epistle of the Corinthians, chapter 6 and verse 17, "Come out from among them, and be ye separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing, and I will receive you, and be a father unto you, and ye shall be my sons and daughters, saith the Lord Almighty." And when we look at the names and the lives and the experiences of Jacob and Esau, there is illustrated to us, which leaves us with no doubt as to their meaning, there is illustrated to us, as the Apostle Paul states there, that there can be no harmony between the flesh and between the things of the Spirit, between Belial and Christ. Now, when we go back to Genesis chapter 25 and verse 25, we have the account of Esau and his birth. It records that he was red. In the 25th verse of chapter 25, we read these words: "And the first," that was Esau, "came out red, all over like a hairy garment, and they called his name Esau." And he was red to the extent that it was the basis of his name, Esau or Edom. The association of this colour throughout the scriptures is that of sin. It is the colour of our blood, so necessary to life, and so evident of how frail we are. Esau is the figure of our basic sin nature, that which is so opposed to the will of God, which the Apostle Paul refers to as sinful flesh, our first inheritance at birth, and which we struggle with all the days of our life. When the apostle wrote to the Hebrews in chapter 12 and verse 16, he makes reference to Esau as being a profane person because he sold his birthright for a mere morsel of meat. To satisfy his natural lusts, he was prepared to throw away his relationship with the Father, which could have been his at birth, which could have been his to the eternal covenant. And it is a principle, brethren and sisters, which is at work in all men, and which can be in us if we are not careful. If we are to attain the glorious resurrection and the change of nature to which we all desire, then we must be subjected to the will of the Father. And so the apostle, when he wrote to the Hebrews in this 12th chapter and at verse 16, he speaks these words and he says, lest there be among you any fornicator or profane person as Esau was, who for one morsel of meat sold his birthright. And we can always be in the danger of that. That for one fatal mistake in our lives, we can lose our inheritance to the kingdom. Esau was a man who grew up without any restraint. He resorted to the natural impulses of the flesh. The basic lusts of his mortal frame are seen in all the actions of men. Genesis chapter 25 and at verse 27 well sums up the features of this man. The features which the world idolizes today. You know what the world is like? They look upon men as being courageous, being strong, of being good sportsmen and good fellows. And the divine word terms them fornicators and profane persons. And so we read in verse 27 that Esau was a cunning hunter. He was a man of the field. It's very interesting, that word field, because in the Hebrew, again, it is the word sorda, and it means spread out, or something which is wild, something which is untamed and unrestrained, so characteristic of the man and the flesh. And this same Hebrew word field, or sordar in the Hebrew, is extended. Let us just turn to Leviticus chapter 26 and verse 22. And there Moses speaks unto the nation of Israel concerning the judgments of God that were to fall upon them if they continued to be disobedient. And he says in verse 22, I will send wild beasts among you, which shall rob you of your children, and destroy your cattle, and make you few in number, and your ways shall be desolate. And the word wild in that verse is the same Hebrew word, sorda, field. And it means that which is untamed, destructive, and unrestrained. And so the wild beasts that came upon Israel were not just the animals of prey, but they were likened to the wild beasts of the nations. Those nations which knew not the will of God. And they are likened to wild beasts. We've only got to turn to the prophecy of Daniel, and they are symbolized there for us as the lion and the bear and the leopard. And there was another dreadful and terrible animal, all who in turn plundered the land and the people of Israel. There were the Assyrians and the Babylonians and the Grecians, and worst of all, the destructive, unrestrained pagan system of Rome. And the center, in the very center of these wild beasts, there have been always the descendants of Esau, this wild man of the field, this cunning hunter, which Genesis 25 and verse 25 tells us that he was red all over like a hairy garment. And the word hairy there in the Hebrew is sahar, and it means something which is horrid and harsh and offensive. The hatred of the Jews by the Arabs has been a constant thorn in the side of Israel right down to our very day. And they have committed many terrible acts against them. They have been, the Arabs, a harsh and offensive people. In the time of David, it was Doeg, the Edomite, a descendant of Esau, which caused so much heartache to that faithful man. It caused the psalmist to pen some very beautiful words. Let us just look at Psalm 140. And they are so expressive of the sin-cursed nature in its natural state. The flesh untamed and unrestrained, asserting itself as it did in this man Doeg, and which we experience, brethren and sisters, in our lives today. The cleverness of men, which continually surround us, wherever we are. Their desires are always aimed towards the flesh. They have no divine knowledge. And all they eat is meat. Not the meat of the word, but that which is a pure morsel, which leads to death. And they are destructive in their greed, and devastating in their abuse of divine principles. And we hear it every day. And we can understand the words of David when he saw this evil man Doeg, and he writes these words. And we can join in with him, because we experience the same things in our lives. Deliver me, O Lord, from the evil man. Preserve me from the violent man, which imagine mischiefs in their heart. Continually are they gathered together for war. They have sharpened their tongues like a serpent. Adder's poison is under their lips. And thoughts like these would have been on the lips of Jacob as he prepared in this 32nd chapter of Genesis and at verse 6 to meet his brother Esau. I wonder if we can put ourselves in his position. He'd been away for 20 years. His brother Esau had threatened to kill him. And now he was going to meet him again. And Esau was on the other side of the brook, Jabbok. And he was coming to meet him with 400 men. Esau would have shook in his shoes, as it were, with fear and foreboding. He would remember the words that Esau had spoken, recorded in Genesis chapter 27 and verse 41, that he had hated his brother because of the blessing wherewith his father blessed him. And Esau said in his heart, "The days of mourning for my father are at hand. Then will I slay my brother Jacob." And if Esau had been of a godly character, he would have submitted to being defrauded. But his actions revealed him to be related to Cain, who slew his brother. And do not we see this attitude again in the nations, particularly the Arabs? who deny the right of Israel to exist and would willingly exterminate them if they had the opportunity. But how different with Jacob. Jacob, who is a type of the Master. Jacob, who should be a type of ourselves. He now was to begin a lifetime of experience. He was to learn some lessons that the ways of the Father and His providential hand in guiding will not be frustrated by the feeble efforts of man. It is a lesson that we have to learn. We may, brethren and sisters, at times try to deceive our brethren and sisters. Sometimes we deceive ourselves, but we cannot deceive the Father. Nothing is hid from His eyes. And like Jacob, it is necessary for us to stumble and to fall. It is necessary for us in humility to realize how faulty our efforts sometimes are. And above all, to understand what is the deceitfulness of sin. Like the red hairy garment. So that we can rise up, leaning upon the wisdom and the guidance of the Word, which the Father has so miraculously provided for us, and learn in our experiences to patiently wait for Him to work out His purpose in us, knowing that His ways are best. We cannot frustrate it. We cannot alter it. It is the pattern that the Father has set in our lives. And it is His will. How beautifully is this revealed to us in the character of Jacob. In Genesis chapter 27 and verse 27, we have the contrast to that of Esau. In that verse we read that Jacob was a plain man. And the Hebrew word there for plain is torn. And it means a complete and perfect and upright man. That's what we have got to be, brethren and sisters. Plain men. Complete and perfect and upright in the ways of the Father. This word tam or torn comes from the root Hebrew word which means without blemish and undefiled, and speaks volumes of the character of this man, both in respect to himself and above that, the one of whom he was the type. The one whom we have come to remember this morning. The man who was without blemish and undefiled. The Master was a plain man. He was complete and perfect and upright. And He calls upon us to be like Him. In Psalm 119 and verse 1, we have this word undefiled used. And this word undefiled is the same word in the Hebrew as the word plain. And it describes those who have a desire to fulfill the pleasure of the Father. Those who desire to attain to this complete perfection promised to all those that walk uprightly. And in Psalm 119 and at verse 1, we read these words: blessed are the undefiled in the way. Blessed are the plain, the upright, those who are complete in the Lord, who walk in the law of the Lord. And again, if we turn to Psalm 37 and at verse 37, we have this same word plain used again, and it is rendered perfect. And it sets out the glorious message, the ultimate destiny of those whose characters are moulded and prepared through trial and tribulation, so beautifully manifested in the Master himself. And in verse 37 we read, mark the perfect man, mark the plain man, the complete man, the upright man. And behold the upright, for the end of that man is peace. And what lovely words those are that conclude that verse. The end of the plain man, the end of the man who is upright and complete, is peace. It carries with it the expression of something to be attained. And we, brethren and sisters, yearn for that day when we shall have peace. And that end will only be attained through endurance. And the lessons we have to learn until we attain to that end are the lessons that Jacob experienced, that we might come to know what are the sufferings of the Master. That we might come to understand in our lives what he had to endure. How that he wrestled, like Jacob, against wicked men. And as the sons and daughters of the living Creator, there has to be a constant chastening. If we are without chastisement, says the Apostle Paul, then we are strangers and not sons. And we shall fall short of the mark of perfection. It is the rod of correction and trial which we must endure. And Jacob experienced it in his life. But his constant strivings led him towards that end, which was peace. He had to flee the land upon which he had set his heart. He had to learn the lesson that faithful service to the Father will never be accomplished by deception. The servant of God is called upon to give glory and honour unto his name, and all the efforts of his servants must be directed towards that end, otherwise they will miscarry. Jacob had to endure the greed and the wrath of Laban with dignity and with courage. And Laban was a man who we experience so often in our lives, who enjoyed gaining the fruits and the riches of this world at the expense of others. And they are all around us. They don't talk in pounds today. They talk in billions. And it is the greed of men. And Jacob had to learn that with Laban. and he had to do it with dignity and courage. Jacob had to also learn the turbulence of family life, the strivings of Leah and of Rachel, and the many difficulties which arose. And there are very few of us, brethren and sisters, who do not experience similar circumstances. Parents, or wives, or husbands, or children, who do not always share our hopes and joys, who sometimes walk contrary to our paths, that cause anxiety in our lives and distress. And now in this 32nd chapter, Jacob comes to meet Esau. The dreaded fear in his heart. Esau had said, I will slay my brother. And Jacob had one more lesson to learn. In order to soothe and alleviate Esau, he sends in advance by his servants a present of animals, and also sends his family on before him over the brook Jabbok. And Jacob remains behind on the other side. And the word Jabbok in verse 22 of chapter 32 means utterly to make void. And the father was now to make Jacob understand that he had to put on him all his trust. Wicked men surrounded him, but now he had to rely upon the Father. And the Father makes known to Jacob that his servants cannot appease or have dealings with those who represent the flesh. And so he sends an angel and wrestles with Jacob. Not a word was spoken. It was in the night. And Jacob puts all his strength forth to overcome. And as he fought with the angel, his guilt and his transgressions rose up before him. And he pleads with the angel for a blessing. And although he prevailed, he was brought to the realization by the angel touching his thigh and disabling him, causing the bitterness of pain, that it is only through humiliation and repentance and self-surrender and a prevailing over sin in the darkness of the night that there will be a glorious dawning of the day. That there will be a victory. That there will be a peace. And so Jacob's name was changed. He was no longer to be a supplanter, which is the name of Jacob. He was no longer to be a tripper up, which is what the rendering means. But he was to be a prince with God. For as a prince thou hast power with God and with men, and hast prevailed. We wrestle, brethren and sisters. We suffer the bitterness of pain. Sin continually trips us up. And we are in the darkness of the night. And as we partake of these emblems, we know, as we wrestle, the day will soon be here when the darkness shall flee away. And we shall cross over, as it were, the brook Jabbok. And all the things of this life will be made utterly void. And our names will be changed. And we shall become princes. in all the earth, because we have prevailed. To him that overcometh will I grant, says Jesus, to sit with me in my throne, even as I overcame and am set down with my Father in his throne.